This week, the National Legislative Assembly conducted a public hearing on the 2023-2024 draft national budget. Joining us in the studio is one of the citizens who were invited to the public hearing. Edmund Yakani is the Executive Director for Community Empowerment for Progress Organization. He joins us. Edmund, good morning. It's always good to have you on the Miraya Breakfast Show.
Yeah, good morning, Sabit William and Irene.
Yes. Now let's just look into this budget. Of course, budget is one of the most difficult thing to explain to a layman when it comes to, you know, like understanding really a budget in the country. Now, is this the first time that the national budget is being handled in the manner, and what are your impression about it?
My impression is that, yes, the budget has come, but still this budget is late in terms of timeline. You know, the financial year of South Sudan reads the 1st of July. It means we're supposed to have this budget before the 1st of July, but it still is late, and always our budgets are late. Why is it late? The blame goes to the executive, not to the legislators in the parliament, because it's the executive who knows that actually you need at least 2 or 3 months before they roll out of a new financial year. That means by May or by April, they could have started preparing this budget. The citizens' hearing or the public hearing that we've had, this could have had either in May or in June, and by 1st July, immediately our financial year roll out. That's supposed to be in normal practice. That is it. But the second thing is that this budget, if you look at it, there are some key concerns that the budget have to respond to, and always is a public outcry. What is it? One, wages and salaries of civil servants. That's one area. And if you look at it, it's not really properly improved. And that's why, and specifically when you look at the lower positions of civil servants, things like soldier salaries and other civil servant salaries, if you look at them, they're really, really, really very low. And for example, you heard of this promise made by His Excellency President that there's an increment of 400%. So 400% based on what? For example, if I'm receiving 6,000 per month SSP and you're giving 400%, it means you apply my 6,000 four times. That means you're adding on for me 24,000 and make 30,000. What's 30,000 in the context we're in now? Completely is not logical.
Realistic. Now, before we go into all those details, you did mention that the budget for the year is supposed to start on the 1st of July. Today, Edmund, we are on the 19th of July. What are we operating on?
We are operating on this particular basis that people are saying, look here, the budget is going on. So somehow like supplementary budget is going on. This is this one biggest thing. And let me tell you also, the delay of this budget is a delay of the salary of the civil servants, by the way. That's interpretation. That's one thing. Secondly, we're also working on this budget. Normally, in a traditional practice of a government, parliament or executive cannot enact a new budget without knowing the report of the previous budget. Okay? For example, if you are to go to other parliaments, they can't pass this budget until they'll ask the executive, what is the performance of the previous budget? To what level have we spent based on the previous budget? So we're now working on a new budget without knowing the expense of the previous budget. So these are all the practices that is really challenging. So we're operating on the basis that actually, I can call it supplementary, but it really, in the real sense, we're operating on our own without any budget guidelines.
Yes.
And this is a moment some people take an advantage of looting, by the way.
And over the years, of course, budget has been passed late, sometimes not even passed, and people have just been operating like that. What is the danger of this?
The danger of this goes back to the position of the executive and specifically the Minister of Finance, what is called budgetary discipline. What discipline do we have towards the implementation of the budget? Because if you see, some ministries spend their budgets over 100%, 200%, and some ministries spend their budget below 50% of what is approved in the budget. So that tells you very clear that there's no financial, there's no budget discipline. Some ministries have a privilege to spend more than the other ministries. And if you look, those ministries just spend more than other ministries, their spending have nothing to do with the improvement of social services or wages of civil servants. That's, their expense sometimes are too much political link to political events that have nothing to do on the impact of the day-to-day life of the citizens. So that's a challenge. That's a challenge. That's a danger that if we don't have a budgetary discipline, the chances of some individuals running away with the public treasury money is very high. That's one thing that is bigger.
Yes.
And specifically, if you look at our source of revenue, one is an oil source of revenue. Now you have 87 source of revenue is direct pay. Direct pay, what does it mean? It means this 87% is either goes to roads or it goes to priority in the presidency or goes to other contracts. That is very hard for you to really assess the impact of the use of the 87 direct pay from the oil revenue. So you're left with 13, almost 13% of the oil revenue to indirect pay, which goes to the sector of the social services. So what is 13% in terms of responding to budget priorities, for example, chapter 1 and then chapter 2 and chapter 3? So it's nothing. So you need to somehow reduce the percentage of the direct pay to become lower, and the percentage of 13 that goes to the budget should be higher. Actually, I wish we could have 87% goes to the response of the budget, and then we have 13 that goes to the indirect pay. So, yeah. So some of the questions that we're raising, that's one thing that we're raising it very, very, very hardly. But also, if you look at the context of the country, as we are in a political transitional process, there's a looming political events. What are these looming political events? The question around political parties need to establish political establishment in this country. What does it mean? That means registration of political parties. Why? Because we have a looming elections. And as we have a looming election, we need to have an electoral commission in position. As election is looming, constitutes is precondition. Now, if you see the allocation of the budget for this particular institution, operations only, these are operations.
Yes.
This not because our argument with the parliament was that the budget is not electoral focus. Then later on, the chairperson of justice and legislation have come up, and the other chairperson have said, look here, elections is a project by itself. So we're going to have a separate budget elections. But what we have in the budget is only for operation of the institutions that are supposed to create conditions for elections. Now, if you look at the political party, the electoral commission is having 2,081,000. If you look at the National Constitutional Review Commission, it has been given 2,087,000. And if you look at the political parties given 1,035,000. Now, if you sum them up, they are all equals to 603,000,000 SSP. And these are institutions supposed to develop human resource to set up their systems in order to prepare for the looming elections. This is very low. Now, if you look at the money of the emergency that have been calculated, is almost like about 37 billion. For emergency, 37 billion, which, of course, is a percentage of the overall budget of the country. And even if you look also at the budget, the CDF has been miscalculated. It's supposed to be 3%. Now, if you see, the CDF is been miscalculated with 5 billion something. Is missing from the CDF. So if you look, some of the figures of the budget is not adding up. And that's why we've been pushing as a citizen, look here, you need to review the budget. But also I've been calling for taxes that are levied on things that have linked with hygiene. Okay, things like
sanitary pads
and all these and food items. Yes, some of them conform to us that. So we've been demanding them reduce it because it have direct link with the hygiene and with the health. And of course, our colleagues from South Sudan Medical Association also have raised up the question of medical discipline in terms of the medical services. These mushrooming clinics and then the quality, the doctors. So to say the training of medical doctors is not a priority. So these are some of the things that we raise it as a priority when we're discussing with the parliamentarians during the public hearing.
Yeah.
So, but what thing that I've come out with is the impression that the MPs are telling us, look here, the budget is a political statement of the executives. So that means the executive have agreed on it. They cannot do it much. But constitutionally, the MPs have responsibility towards the budget.
Yeah.
They will reject it or they will adjust it. So they have those responsibility. They have the responsibility to adjust it. But the statement they're giving us, look here, this is a political statement of the executive. So this is what the executive is going to do. So for me, that's really a big issue that I feel we need to raise it up in terms of. But of course, the Committee of Finance have confirmed to us that they will take our input. So if you look at the budget are not adding up. But also if you look at the wages, I have come across a proposal from the Security and Defense Committee in the parliament, proposal of salaries improvement to the soldiers. You come to us, their proposal is much more better than the proposal in the budget. So we have been telling the politicians, you sit in a V8 with a very good AC, you sit in a very comfortable house, and you have a bodyguard, and you need this bodyguard to whole night keep on watching for your safety and security moving around, either for the citizens in the town or in your houses or in the bush, looking on something that contribute to our safety and security, and you pay the soldier less.
At the end of the day.
So the salaries of the soldiers determine the safety and protection of our lives when you're sleeping. Like, look at those ones who stand on the road
at night
checking the vehicles. They end up actually begging, some of them.
Absolutely.
Simply because they have no.
So
it's a question of the discipline of the political leadership to prioritize certain civil servant salaries. And on the top is the soldier salaries
All right.
and other civil servants.
Yes, and after this public hearing yesterday, where you inform us to what would be the next step, what will be done next?
Of course, what will be done next is that the committee will take our inputs and incorporate into the budget, and they as a finance committee now will present to the rest of the parliament, and that may create some adjustments in the priorities of the budget, and now they'll communicate back to the Minister of Finance. That's one thing that happened. And the other thing also I've discovered is that there's this concept of equal sharing of resources. South Sudan does not need equal sharing of resources. We need equitable sharing of resources. Some communities For example, some communities are less developed. Let me give a very practical example. Before the crisis, I was in Pagak. It takes me almost like 4 hours to walk from Pagak because there's no food. I have to eat the food in a place in Ethiopia called Kwergang. Mm-hmm. And as I'm going, I have to cross at least a river. So I have almost like 4 hours looking for food. That is in Pagak in 2009. And I'm quite sure up to now some places are more even worse than that particular situation. But if you come to Juba, it only takes you 2 minutes or 3 minutes to get a place to eat. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean? It means places where development is less, we need to give them more money. Places where development is better, we need to reduce their budget. So that does not mean equal distribution. It means equitable distribution. But because our MPs want to find a way of saying we are equal. No, we are not equal. The parliament need to think about equitable distribution. But this also starts from the executive. So I'd like to say if there's a failure of the budget, if we're to distribute blames, mm-hmm. actually 60% of the blames will go to the executive. 60% should go to the executive because executive are the origin. And out of that 60% that goes to the executive, if I'm to distribute within the executive, actually 40% of the 60 should go to the Minister of Finance. Because mm-hmm. Minister of Finance sometimes undermines some of the priority of the ministry. For example, fish is much more better than oil. But the Ministry of Fisheries, you give them less budget. Ministry of Agriculture, you give them less budget. Besides, we have commitment to certain regional and global standards. For example, we launched Maputo Protocol. Maputo Protocol is demanding the overall 10% of the budget should go to agriculture for food security. And here we're saying we are party to Maputo Protocol. And also if you look at Abuja Agreement was telling that every African country must give 15% of the overall budget to health, because the moment your health is okay, you will go better. And the moment you have a food security, you will go better. So if you look at those commitments, we're not respecting them in our mm-hmm. budget. So it means we don't have discipline to our regional and international obligations.
Right. Yes, let's talk about the agricultural budget that you said is very less. And we all know, of course, that South Sudan imports food from almost the neighboring countries. And we have all the potential that it will take to produce food for the whole region. Why is it not taken the priority when it comes to, making this budget?
I feel maybe our executives are eating too much from hotels. And if they have food in their houses, their food may be being imported from somewhere. So they don't feel the importance of having a food that is affordable, that is less. That's one thing that I look at it. Because if our executives, our ministers, if they can really think that we cannot produce and we need to import from outside, then they are not the leaders that we want in that particular council of ministers. Right. For example, let me give an example. Look at our forces that are supposed to be deployed to DRC as a peacekeeping force. They get stranded in Western Equatoria. Look at the commander, what have done. The commander said, instead of being stranded there waiting for food from Juba, the commander worked together with the soldiers, they farm maize. And the deputy governor of Western Equatoria visited their maize farm. Look at the maize farm, how much is promising. And actually say, it's better instead of taking them to DRC, let's convert it to remain as a unit of the bill farm for farming. Mm-hmm. Because they have shown it very clear that we have the all possible potentiality.
All right.
Because if they go to DRC, we'll not have the maize. But not after leaving Bill Farm, they have generated for us maize that we've seen.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the budget itself. Now, in this, you've seen the budget. You people had a public hearing about the budget. Where is the much money of the country going in this budget? And mm-hmm. which one is the least? Let's say the third most where the budget is, and then the third least priorities here in the budget.
If you look at this budget, if you look at the distribution of the budget, it shows us very clear that there's a much more money going to the presidency. That's one thing mm-hmm. that I have to be honest. And the ministries that have list figures, it's a ministries, for example, Ministry of Gender, and I saw also agriculture has been given less money. So if you see the list figure that I can see very clear allocated is, for example, look at this. Let me give an example. South Sudan Revenue, South Sudan Civil Aviation.
Yeah.
Is given 1 billion. And this is the image of the country. And actually, even to the best of my knowledge, to know actually, our airport is not insured. Mm-hmm. So our plane is taking off, landing off on their own risk.
Yeah.
So
we heard about the accidents that have
been happening. Yeah, exactly. And if you realize globally, it's a best practice that places like South Sudan Civil Aviation, it's supposed to be having a financial autonomous. They're supposed to be independent. Why? Because that is the image of the country. That's look at the washrooms at the airport. Can you blame the director of South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority that he is not performing? No, he doesn't have money from the government to run the airport at the standard that is required. Look at the AC system. Look even the way how if you arrive, look at the way how our luggage has been moved. So imagine the image of the country, like civil aviation. You give them less money and you have people who are coming there. Even the sewage system is questionable. The fencing of the airport is questionable. That's one of the least.
Someone will be reasoning that the airport makes as well quite a lot of money for the country.
But also the money from the airport, does it really go to our public treasury? That's the question. Mm-hmm. Does it not go to certain pockets that are of higher authority that you cannot question them because they sit at the highest authority?
Now, one layman listening to us will be asking, why is the presidency getting the bigger budget? For what? I mean, most of them is for their personal...
of course, costs.
Costs and personal...
Look
outfits.
At the motorcades.
Yes, and why are they getting a lot of budget?
How do you move their motorcades?
When a whole country, let's say healthcare and education and you know, security is in need.
You know, once you have deficit in trust and confidence among top structure of a political leadership, you invest a lot on creating safety and security there. And for you to create that, it consumes a lot of budgets. Look at the motorcades that are moving. Look at the motorcades. Really, do we deserve them if we have trust and confidence among ourselves as a top leadership? I don't think we need to spend a lot of money for those motorcades. That's one of the things. Secondly, look at the way how the offices operates, the number of people, and that you don't see their direct impact on the social life of the citizens. Those are the things. And then also look at the bigger size of the presidency we have. You see, the bigger size of the presidents, look.
If there are five.
Yeah. Then these five, have you seen any of them moving with only two V8s or three V8s?
No.
And I was telling somebody, actually, if you were to calculate the fuel burn by the presidency, moving from home to office, from office to home without any journey, it's actually either equal to two medical facilities or three basic schools that will have accommodated us. That's only burning the fuel. That's why it takes a highest cost, because it's the biggest. And that's why here, somehow I would like to tell you that I don't buy any excuse for the conduct of the elections. If you're to blame anybody, we blame the presidency. If you're not to have credible elections.
Great.
All this requires the leadership at the presidency to change their political attitudes for the best interest of the citizens. And the best interest of the citizens is that they have to do anything that it accounts and contributes to the improvement of life of the common citizens rather than political leaders.
Yes, and Edmund, the public hearing yesterday, of course, you have made your submissions and you said it will go back. And what do you think would be the situation? What do you think after this your submission, do you expect some changes really?
I don't expect, and
if there are no changes, what next?
I don't expect a lot of changes. Why? Because also you can see the way the government operates is that there's a political allegiance to political parties more stronger than to the government. Though we do hear them saying we're supposed to operate as a government of national unity. So some MPs like to favor their ministers and protect their ministers and some not. So there will be no much more improvement in the budget. The budget is going to remain as it is, this one. Secondly, we have this particular practice where the Ministry of Finance is actually stronger than the whole executive, than the whole Council of Ministers, okay? The Council of Ministers meet there at equal capacity, but decision of the Ministry of Finance sometimes undermines the decision of the Council of Ministers. And that means even the Ministry of Finance by itself is one of the hindrance of a better budget performance in the country. So they believe like they're everything, because they're the one who delaying all these budgets. Is ministries submit their budgets, but within to generate a budget to translate the proposal of the ministries into an overall national budget is delayed by the Ministry of Finance. So we need to improve the Ministry of Finance. And in Ministry of Finance, we have two HTP directors. They just said that's supposed to go for pension. And we learned in the public hearing that actually our pension scheme fund have money. So if there's any ministry to phase pensioning quickly, it's the Ministry of Finance, because we need people who are energetical. And especially we are in the global world of technology, digitalized. You have people there, when they see laptop, they fear it.
Mm-hmm.
And still remain in a ministry to make decisions for the destiny of this country.
All right. Now let's talk, of course, which you mentioned throughout this conversation is the issue of discipline. You can have the most beautiful budget for the whole country, but if you don't have the discipline to respect the budget, then it counts to nothing at the end of the day. Now, also accountability, for lack of discipline. We haven't seen it over the years. Why do we have a budget? And how do we even make sure that now, going into this budget, there will be discipline and there will be accountability? People will answer if they misuse the budget.
You know, I've been closely for the last 5 years watching the question of discipline in terms of the use of the budget and accountability and fighting corruption. I don't know if you realize, I've been closely tracking more than 5 speeches of the president on appointment of a new finance minister. And there's normally a common sentiment coming from His Excellency the President whenever any new finance minister comes. Finance minister, either revenue authority or customs director. Normally, the president have a constant message in these appointments. One is warning that, one, I want to make sure that you use the resources better. Two, I want to make sure that you minimize corruption. Three, if you don't adhere to this, I will not keep you. Mm-hmm. So, those are the messages always coming from His Excellency President. I've been following for 6 years appointment of finance ministers. Now, you come to realize that the same warning he gave, the same people he warned, they will go do exactly what he warned them for. Mm-hmm. Then they practice this, in my observation. Sometimes president dismiss this particular person from the ministry, sack him off, give him 1 or 2 years, but again retain the same person for the same similar job and even more better than that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what does it mean? It means the more you have misconduct in financial sector, you will be disciplined for a suspension of 1 year, but you will be rewarded to more benefit than the first you have been in. So people feel like it's a normal.
So it's like a cycle of lack of accountability.
Mm-hmm. So I think for me, number one, with due respect and honor, I ask the office of the president, when the president made those statements, they translate those statements to actual practice. So the first center that will instill discipline in terms of budgetary and expenditure of public treasury comes from the president office. Come from himself, from himself, His Excellency President. Towards who? Towards the financial institutions. Because if once you sack somebody for corruption, don't reward this person. And don't just sack. Sacking the person is not enough. Yeah. It's actually hold the person accountable, because you have pronounced the word of accountability during the speech of appointment. Why are you not holding him accountable when rather your own speech is being undermined by supporting that you won before? So for me, this is one of the biggest things. So that's why now corruption has become a normal practice. That's not. Actually, even I've come across some discussion where some politicians are told by the community, if they're not corrupt, they're told that you're stupid, you're idiot, mm-hmm. you're given the chance.
And that brings us to the question of Anti-Corruption Commission, of course, which was established in the country for some time. Do you really think it is doing its work, or is not being empowered?
You know, the accountability sector in the country is not being empowered, and the accountability sector in the country is being politically undermined. Why? I'll give you, for example, Anti-Corruption Commission, it's supposed to have judiciary power. And Anti-Corruption Commission is supposed to be one of the body empowered, even to follow up the whole process, the budget, so that they can later on hold the politicians accountable. And Anti-Corruption works together with the National Auditor General. But it comes to us, the Office of the Auditor General is being undermined. Okay, there's no power, there's no resources. And Auditor General have submitted reports that even the political leadership of the country does not want to impose these reports to be seen. That's what I'm saying. For example, we are having 2023-2024 budget without knowing the expenses of 2022-2023 budget. And how much corruption cases have we seen in 2022-2023? We didn't hold them accountable, and we're going to new budget process. So for me, the accountability sector, that's why I was somebody who was saying, if we want to fight corruption, the first thing is that empower anti-corruption institutions, empower the Anti-Corruption Commission, empower the National General Auditor, and then empower other institutions, like, for example, judiciary, to have a focus on holding people who are accountable. But unfortunately, as corruption institution is weak, actual corruption is being blessed into practice.
This all sounds bleak to the entire, of course, citizens of the country when it comes to accountability and fighting corruption. What do we do? Do we just wait, fold our hands and say, well, let's pray that things change?
I don't think we need to wait and fold our hands and just watch out. What I will try to really push on is that we need to speak out. For example, if we are really serious and want to see that there's accountability, we need to really speak very, very, very strongly, and we don't need to allow that. And one thing that I like to say is that, for example, as activists, if we cannot respond to corrupt cases very essentially in the country, and if we test our judiciary is not responding, we move to the regional mechanism. mechanisms for accountability purposes. So this is something that I would like to bring. For example, if you look at the Anti-Corruption Commission budget that is now in this budget, and remember, this is a budget of Anti-Corruption Commission in a political transitional season, $300 million. Mm-hmm. But also the 300 million, the figures that we have seen in the budget may not be actual. Actually, later on they'll get maybe physically less than that. They may get either 50% or even 30% of what is being budgeted for. Mm-hmm. So undermining Anti-Corruption Commission operation and function is just undermining the accountability and justice. That means you blessed corruption to continue by undermining Anti-Corruption Commission budget. The same thing, like if you say you want safety and security in the communities, you undermine the DDR Commission. Actually, you're blessing people to keep killing themselves, because you cannot disarm to people with an institution that is not empowered to disarm you civilians. So these are big issues. Right. Anti-Corruption Commission, DDR Commission, Human Rights Commission, these commissions require to have good budgets to instill culture of discipline that contribute to overall peace and stability in the country. Otherwise, if this institution doesn't have money, then you don't have that public discipline that will create the purpose of why they're created. Anti-Corruption is created to make sure there's no corruption. Human Rights Commission is created to make sure that we respect human rights. DDR Commission is created to make sure that we don't hold arms in our hands. But these are the institutions that you don't empower them. But yes. If you go to the security sector, you go to Interior, you go to Bell Farm, you go to National Security, they have the money. But they buy these weapons and then it melts into the hands of the civilians.
All right. And Mon, let's leave it like that. Thank you very much indeed for coming to Mirai Studios. It's always great talking to you.
Thank you very much. And I wish that our presidents would really listen to our voices and make sure this year we have improvement in the budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Edmond.